something that I think applies to all of us, which is something called leadership. All of us, to some extent, have dreams of being a leader. It could be a leader in your family. It could be a leader in your seminary, in your school, in college, of a club, leadership in terms of women and Torah. So many different forms of leadership in your profession, whatever that's going to be. And the question is, who is supposed to lead? And what qualities should a person have in order to be able to lead? What I want to look at today is someone who was introduced to us in last week's Parsha, which is Yehoshua. We all know really well the leadership of Moshe. We hear that throughout Shmos and Bamidbar. So many stories of Moshe and his incredible leadership. And then, as we all know, Moshe dies. And somebody has to take over for Moshe. And this has got to be the hardest position for anyone to take over. This has to be the most intimidating situation for just about anyone. And the question is, who should get that position? And I guess my question is, now looking backwards, why was it Yehoshua? Why? So you might say to me, what a silly question. It was Yehoshua because God told Moshe to pick Yehoshua. And that is 100% true. But I would like to believe that God didn't just pick Yehoshua's name out of a hat, that God had a reason to pick Yehoshua. But my question is a little bit stronger than just why Yehoshua. It's that I actually have reason to believe that Yehoshua should maybe not have been chosen at all. And what are my reasons? I hope everyone has a source sheet in front of you as I fly through this in time for your next thing at 12:30, which is, here is my question. In source number one, the Ramban asks the following question. When we list the most important story of Yehoshua in the time of Moshe, is the story of the Meraglim, the story of the spies. And when we're listing all the spies, the 12 spies that are sent, it's in a very strange order. It's not in order of age. It's not Reuven, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda. It's not in any order that we understand. So comes the Ramban and explains to us in source number one, Kol ma'alat atzman min am. We counted them, the Meraglim, in order of significance. Whoever was the most important of all the spies, he was number one. Whoever was second to most important, he was number two. So wouldn't you have expected that the person who takes over for Moshe Rabbeinu should be number one? But he isn't. Number two! He isn't. Do you know what number Yehoshua was? Number five. Which means there are four more people on that list that were more important than Yehoshua, including Caliph. Why was Yehoshua chosen? I continue my question by showing you source number two. You see, Moshe was worried about Yehoshua. And therefore, before the spies are sent into Israel, you all know, Vayikra, Moshe, Loshea, Ben Nun, Yehoshua, he changes his name. Says Rashi, why does he change his name? To pray to God, please, Ka Yoshiach Meyatzek Meraglim, save him from the Merag. Why does Moshe have to pray for Yehoshua? Because he's worried. He's worried maybe Yehoshua will be influenced, maybe something will go wrong. Well, why is it that the next leader of the Jewish people is someone that you're worried about, is going to get influenced by the Merag? Source number three, the Meraglim come back. You all know 10 of them say bad things, 2 of them don't. Who speaks up? Is it our next leader? Is it Yehoshua? No, it's not. Source 3, Vayahas Kalev et ha'am. Yeshua's quiet, doesn't say a word. Kalev gets up and says, no, it's okay, guys. Now, it's true Yehoshua does speak up. Psukim later, I gave it to you in source number 4. First Moshe and Aaron fall on their face. Then Yehoshua and Kalev rip their clothes. And then Vayomru, in plural, they both try to speak. But at this point, it's too late and they have to run away because they're going to be stoned. Yehoshua, though, does not speak up in the beginning. Kalev does. And that's why source number 5, God praises Kalev. V'abdi Kalev, ekev haita ruach acharet imo. Whoa, Kalev, you did something amazing. Yehoshua says nothing. Now, it's true Yehoshua is rewarded that he gets to live and he gets to go into Eretz Yisrael. That's true. But Kalev gets praised. Kalev gets a land designated Hebron to himself, and Yehoshua does not. Not only that, in source number 6, as I said to you before, orders of names in Torah is always very important. It's either normally age order or significance order. So, for example, in source number 6, when we're talking about Moshe and Aaron, Almost always, Moshe's name comes before Aaron because Moshe's more important than Aaron. He has the main leadership role. Aaron has the secondary role in the Kohen Gadol. However, if you look then two more times, we list Kalev and Yoshua, and whose name comes first? Kalev ben Yefuna, Yoshua ben Nun. Kalev ben Yefuna Kenizi, Yoshua ben Nun. Kalev's name is listed first. So I'm looking at the story of the Meraglim, and I'm not really understanding why Yoshua gets chosen, especially in comparison to Kalev. And then I continue looking at stories of Yoshua in Shemos and in Bamidbar, and I continue to question why we choose Yoshua. You see, there are two stories where Yoshua makes a mistake, where Yoshua sees a situation, completely misjudges it, and Moshe has to yell at him. In situation number one is the story of Chet Egel, source number 7. Moshe's up on the mountain. He comes down because God says there's something going on. Yoshua is with Moshe and says to him, Vayomer Moshe kol mochamav amachaneh, there's a war going on. And Moshe has to rebuke him. You're wrong, Yoshua. You are not correct in going on. We have a second story in source number 8 in Bamidbar. Eldad and Medad are two of the chosen to be the 70 Zekanim, but they do not go to the Ohel Moed like they're supposed to, and they start prophesizing in the machane, in the camp. And Yoshua screams out, Vayomer Adoni Moshe Kala'im, I'm insulted for Moshe, you can't do this. And Moshe yells at Yoshua, you're wrong, Yoshua. That was the wrong reaction. So here I have Yoshua, who in the Meraglim story is good, but he's not the greatest. Here I have Yoshua two more times makes a misjudgment and reacts incorrectly. And lastly, in source number 9, when Yoshua finally is chosen to take over the leadership, he is terrified. He is terrified. And how do I know he's terrified? Because so many times, and I gave it to you, 7 times in the Pesukim, we have to tell Yoshua, Chazak v'yamatz, be strong. When do you say to somebody, be strong? When they're scared. When they're terrified. If somebody's fine, you're not like, don't worry, it'll be okay. I know it'll be okay, leave me alone, right? But if someone is scared, be strong, okay, be strong, be strong. 3 times in Devarim, Moshe says, Chazak v'yamatz. 3 times in Perek Aleph of Sefer Yoshua, Hashem says, Chazak v'yamatz. So too, in the last one I gave you, the Jewish people, or specifically Reuben, Gad, and Chatzi Shevet Menashe, say to Yoshua, Chazak v'yamatz, because he's so scared. Now, when it comes to a leader, if you want people to follow you and to people to have confidence in you, you might be scared, but you can't show that you're scared. Because if you show that you're scared, no one's going to follow your lead. And how do I know that? In source number 10, I have another character in Torah who is really scared to become the leader, and that's, of course, Shaul HaMelech. Shaul HaMelech, when he's told he's going to be king, and he knew it before the lottery because Shmuel had already anointed him, so it's not a shocker that his name gets pulled out of the hat, right, of the lottery. Shmuel calls out, Shaul, Vayivakshu v'lo nimsa. They can't find him. And the pasuk tells us, where is he? Hinehu nachbala kelim. He's hiding with the utensils. He's hiding in the closet. He is so incredibly scared. And what happens because he's hiding, because he shows that he is terrified? Ubinei b'lial amru mayashianuzeh. The people say, well, who's, you're going to save us? You're so scared. How are you going to save us at all? And they make fun of him as the king. And they don't listen to him. That's the issue with Yoshua, wouldn't it be? He's so scared. Everyone knows Chazak v'yamatz. Why are you picking him as the leader? How is he going to be a good leader? You know, before I can answer the question about Yoshua, let me ask a different question. If I'm going to challenge Yoshua's leadership, then I have to give you other options of maybe who I think should be better. Because sometimes the answer just is, which is true when I teach Sefer Shoftim in Stern, and I get the question of why was Yiftach chosen as the Shofet? There's so many flaws, there's so many issues. And sometimes the answer just is, maybe that's the best we had, that's the best we could find, right? But here the question is there someone better, potentially, that could have been chosen instead? So if you look to Moshe Rabbeinu, we hear nothing of his sons. So much so to the extent, source 11, when it says, Ve'ela told us Aaron and Moshe, here's the generations of Aaron and Moshe, it doesn't even list Moshe's children. How about Aaron's children? Well, Aaron's children, we know, take over the kahuna, Elazar becomes the Kohen Gadol. So who's left? Let me give you 2 other options. Option number 1 might have been obvious so far with what we've been discussing, which is Kalev. What about Kalev? He seemed to have outshined Yehoshua in the Meraglim story. He seemed to have been strong enough to get up and say, come on, guys, we can do this. We can come in. And we have 2 other Kalev stories. If you look at source number 12, you see, what I love about Kalev is that a good leader, a quality that a good leader has to have, is that if you say something, you have to follow through. If you say you can do something, then show us that you can actually do it. Caleb gets up and says to the Jewish people in the story of the Meraglim, don't be scared of the giants. Don't be scared of them. It's okay. We can conquer them. Source number 12 in Sefer Yehoshua, Vayoresh Misham Kalev et Shlosha B'nei Ha'anak. Kalev kills the giants. He does exactly what he says. What an incredible leader. Not only that, in Sefer Yehoshua it is clear, Kalev is the leader of the tribe of Yehuda, who is the only Shevet that gets rid of all the Canaanim from their Nachalah, from their land. What an incredible leader, and possibly an option. Option number 2 is another character that we see 3 times in the Psukim, which is Pinchas. Possibly Pinchas could have been our next leader. Where do I know of Pinchas? Well, we all know the famous story, Source 13, which is Cusbi and Zimri are sinning in public, the sin of Baal Peor, in the middle of Bamidbar. And what does Pinchas do? Look at the pasuk. He sees it. Vayit kor et shneihem. Oh my gosh, he pierces a spear through them, and he kills them. And that is an incredible, incredible event that Pinchas does to stop the plague and to save the Jewish people. But there are 2 more Pinchas stories. Let me finish Pinchas and I'll take a question. Second story of Pinchas, source 14. It's the time period of Sefer Yehoshua. And Yehoshua, at the very end of his leadership, has a problem. The problem is as follows. With Moshe, that they would not go to live on the other side of the Yarden until they finished helping to conquer Eretz Canaan. Now it is time they get sent home. They get back sent home to the Eretz Yarden. And now what do they do when they get there? They build a Mizbeach. And Yehoshua and the Jewish people come to the conclusion they are rebelling against the Jewish people. They are breaking away. They are starting their own religion. We need to kill them. And they get ready to fight a civil war against Reuven, Gad, Hatzi, Shev, Menashe. Pinchas is chosen to be sent to Reuven, Gad, Hatzi, Shev, Menashe to talk. And what Pinchas finds out in Source 14 is that they weren't rebelling at all. They weren't building a Mizbeach to use. They were building a Mizbeach as a symbol. We are part of the Jewish people. We may live on the other side of the Yarden, but we are connected back to the other side. Pinchas realizes they're not doing anything wrong, comes to the conclusion we have no reason to fight them, comes back to the other side, tells Yehoshua, and he prevents a civil war, all in Source 14. We then see Pinchas one more time. Source 15. The end of Sefer Shoftim. We have almost a civil war against the tribe of Binyamin. We fight Binyamin, and we lose. We fight Binyamin again, and we lose. The Jewish people come to Pinchas, and they say, Pinchas, should we fight? Should we do it? Pinchas says, yes, you should. And then we fight, and we win. 3 times in the story, we see Pinchas. So now I'm back to my question. If I have other possibilities, like Kalev, like Pinchas, why did God pick Yehoshua? Why was Yehoshua the absolute correct leader for the time period of taking over after Moshe? And I believe the answer is 3 different reasons. Number 1 is consistency. Number 2 is commitment. And number 3 is growth. And I want to explain all 3 of these answers, and they can all be true. When you have an excellent leader, when he dies or when he retires or whatever happens to him, you want something that is consistent to the message of that first leader. If you don't like the first leader, you don't need that. But if you like him, which I assume Moshe, lo kam b'Yisrael k'Moshe, oh, there's nobody like Moshe. We needed somebody who would be consistent within what Moshe has accomplished and within what Moshe wanted to do and his leadership in general. Who is more perfect than somebody who is labeled in Source 16 4 times as Misharet Moshe, the helper of Moshe? What is a Misharet? The Mefarshim say, Mitalmidav, it was a student of his, Mine'orav, one of his boys. What does it mean? And I guess my question is a little bit further than that. Is being the Misharet Moshe a unique position? Does Moshe only have one Misharet? Or was it a whole group of people and Yehoshua was one of many? Was Yehoshua unique or was he not unique at all? Well, it happens to be that this is a Machloket Mefarshim, if you look at source number 17, where the Pasuk in Bamidbar says as follows, Yehoshua benu Misharet Moshe Mibchu Rav. Says Ibn Ezra, what does the word Mibchu Rav mean? Brings up 2 possibilities. Possibility number 1 is the word Mibchu Rav is Shesharet Oto Miyom Shahayat Bachur. from the time he was a bahur, mibhurab, from the days when he was young, which means he is unique. He has been with Moshe since he was a little boy and followed Moshe around. He is different than everybody else. But says Ibn Ezra, I don't like that approach. And he answers, no. Who may hamuf harim l'sharet Moshe? He's not from the time he was a boy, but rather, mibhurab, he's from the chosen. He's from the chosen people who serve Moshe. Ki acherim yeshimo. There's a whole bunch of them. It's not just Yoshua. So we have two different reads here. Yoshua is the only misharet Moshe, or there's many misharsim for Moshe. There's a lot of people who help out Moshe. I went on a search through Torah, finding out all other people that are labeled as a misharet of somebody else, to try to understand this role. Is it unique? Is it not unique? And I found a number of people. Source 18, misharet, another misharet is actually a woman here, so she's a misharat et hamelech. We're talking about a woman by the name of Avishag. When David is very cold, when he's older, and he cannot get warmed, we go out to seek out this woman who's very beautiful to serve the king. In this situation, that position was very unique. It seems she is the only one who is chosen for such a position, making it sound like something unique. Source number 19, Elisha, is Vayishar Sehu, the Misharet of Eliyahu. And without question, in the Psukim, Eliyahu does not like to be around any other human beings. He's a loner of a character, and actually does not even like that God wanted him to hang out with Elisha. Clearly, Elisha was unique, being the only Misharet to Eliyahu. However, when I looked further, there are other situations of being a Misharet that's not unique at all. In source number 20, Yosef twice is Vayisharet Oto or Vayisharet Otam. Yosef is the Misharet of Potiphar. He's the Misharet of the head of the jail. And he clearly is not the only one who is the Misharet of either of those situations. We know Potiphar had many servants. So too in source 21, Shmuel is described as the Misharet of Eli. And we know Eli's sons Chafni and Pinchas work for him as well, and possibly other Kohanim. However, even in these last two examples of Yosef and Shmuel, they may not be unique when they started, but we all know their storyline. Yosef works himself up to be the head of Potiphar's household. Shmuel works himself up to be the next person in line to be the head Kohen in the Mishkan, and then becomes the Shofet. So they may not have started as unique, but they certainly end in a unique situation. Let's relate this back to Yoshua. Either Yehoshua is completely unique to Moshe. He is the only Misharet that Moshe has. And he follows Moshe around all the time, being the only person who really has access to everything about Moshe. The Abarbanel in source 22 takes on this view. And he says, you know why Moshe changed Yehoshua's name from Hoshea to Yoshua? It has nothing to do with the Meraglim at all. He actually changed Yoshua's name from Hoshea to Yoshua when he first met him as a young boy. And he said, there's something about you. Mipnei shehikir bo shaya yarei shamayim, you are special. So I'm changing your name, putting God's name into your name to Yehoshua. And I'm doing it at a young age because I'm selecting you for this unique position of being my second-hand man. You are right there by my side at all times. And the pasuk only tells us that in the story of Meraglim, but it really happened much earlier. Abarbanel thinks Yehoshua was selected as a unique figure from day one. But then you can also take the second possibility. You're right, there were a lot of people that were chosen to be the Misharet Moshe, but Yehoshua grew within the position, and he made himself unique. How do I know? Because I follow the stories. Source 23, we have the war against Amalek. Moshe standing on the mat with his hands up, and who's fighting down below? Yehoshua. He got a promotion. He's no longer this guy following Moshe around. Moshe's giving him leadership jobs. Go fight a war, Yehoshua. You're in charge. Source 24, he gets his second promotion. Moshe says to him, come on Har Sinai with me. You don't get to go all the way up, but you get to go further than everybody else. Not even the Zakenim, not even Aaron get to go as far as you do. And source 25, after Chet HaEgel, where Moshe removes himself and lives alone in the Ohel by himself, who gets to live with him? Umisharso Yehoshua ben Nun Nar lo yamish mitoch ha'Ohel. Yehoshua is the only one who's allowed in that Ohel. He's the only one who gets to hang out with Moshe. Everybody else, the Pesukim describe, stand at the entrance of their tents, peering in, looking at them, but they can't get access, they can't get close. So clearly, Yehoshua got to hang out with Moshe way more than anyone else. Yehoshua got to see things that nobody else could see, and he got to learn what Moshe would do in every situation. This reminds me of Elisha, who follows around Eliyahu for years, learning what Eliyahu would do before he takes over Eliyahu's position. I'm sure Elazar, who becomes the Kohen Gadol after his father, watched his father for years before taking over the position. When you want to have consistency in a job, you need somebody who's watched the person before them for long periods of time to know exactly how to do the job the way the person before them would do it. The only person who had that experience was Yehoshua. Reason number one. Reason number two is commitment. What do I mean by commitment? You see, if you look very clearly at the psukim about Yehoshua, there is one aspect of Yehoshua that is absolutely clear about his personality and about his leadership. And that is, he is obedient. You tell him to do something, he will do it exactly the way you tell him to do. This is Yehoshua's personality. How do I know? We are introduced to it on day one, source 26. In the war against Amalek, Vayas Yehoshua kasher amar lo Moshe, he does exactly what Moshe tells him to do. Now that's not a striking pasuk. That's a very normal pasuk. But then when you realize that that pasuk appears always throughout Yehoshua, every time Yehoshua does anything, you realize that we're trying to teach us something very important about Yehoshua. If you look at source 27, 28, 29, 30, I highlighted for you how in every situation, save for Yehoshua, when he does anything, the pasuk highlights that he's copying what Moshe told him to do. I'll just do one with you. When they cross over the Yarden, source 27, Kol hadavar asher tziva Hashem et Yehoshua ledaber la'am, kechol asher tziva Moshe et Yehoshua. He did everything God told him to do, which is everything that Moshe told him to do. When he repeats over the Torah, there's a stress. He listened to everything Moshe said. Gives over the brachos and klalos, conquering the land over and over. I hope you're seeing it because I bolded it for you. Kasher tziva Moshe eved Hashem. That word is just the milan manchot. It's the word that just repeats over and over throughout Sefer Yehoshua. It's fabulous. However, what's interesting is that people realize this about Yehoshua. If you want Yehoshua to do something, then it has to be that Moshe told him to do it, for him to do it. So therefore, in source 32, 33, and 34, there are three stories where people want Yehoshua to do something. So what are they going to say? Don't you know, Yehoshua? Moshe said to do it. Ugh! And I listen, because I'm Yehoshua. So Yehuda saying, Yehoshua, Moshe told you that you're supposed to give land to Caleb. He does it. But no, Slapha said, remember, Moshe said you're supposed to give us land for our father. He does it. And then Levi says, remember, Moshe said you're supposed to give us some land. Yehoshua does it. Whatever Moshe told Yehoshua to do, he does. I love source 35. Look at it with me. Kasher tziva Hashem, it's Moshe Abdo. Kain tziva, Moshe's Yehoshua. V'chein asa Yehoshua. Lo isir devar mikol asher tziva Hashem, it's Moshe. That's like the theme song of Sefer Yehoshua. God said it to Moshe. Moshe then said it to Yehoshua. And Yehoshua did everything he was supposed to do. He didn't veer at all, because that is the personality of Yehoshua. Commitment to everything Moshe told him to do. But it's not just commitment to what Moshe told him to do. It's commitment to everything Moshe stands for. He tries to do everything the way Moshe would have done it. I gave you a chart of all the similar things between what Moshe did and Yehoshua does. Moshe sent Meraglim, so of course Yehoshua sends Meraglim. Moshe split a sea, Yehoshua splits a sea. Moshe holds up his hands in a battle, so does Yehoshua. Moshe gets a mako, so does Yehoshua. Both of them on and on, just look through the sources, they both have the same situation of remove your shoes because you're standing on a holy ground. Over and over, the entire Sefer is just miniature stories of what happened to Moshe. Because Yehoshua does everything that Moshe does. Yehoshua does everything Moshe told him to do. The commitment is absolute. It does not surprise me, therefore, the story in source 36 that I brought down as a negative before as a positive, which is, why does Moshe give over changing Yehoshua's name? Because everything about Yehoshua is attached back to Moshe. So Moshe changes his name to give over some of himself to Yehoshua. So to in source 37, Moshe puts, Vayesmochet Yadav Alav, gives over, says in Devarim, some of his Ruach Chachma, some of his wisdom, some of whatever that means, the spirituality of Moshe, transfers from Moshe to Yoshua when Moshe is about to die. Very similar, source 38, Nachal Ruach Eliyahu al Elisha, the spirit of Eliyahu transfers over to Elisha. Here we have two people, Yoshua and Elisha, who are not just the next leaders after Moshe and Eliyahu, but they're actually taking over the mission of Moshe and Eliyahu. The Moshe and Eliyahu are dying because something went wrong, and they're taking it over. So when you take over someone's mission, you need to continue what they were doing. You need to commit yourself to what they were supposed to do, and you're taking a piece of them into your mission. So why is this so important that Yoshua is so committed? So number one, it's really important because he needed to in order to get the people's respect. The people say to him in Source 39, we'll listen to Yoshua, sure we will, but look what they say. Kechol asher shamanu al Moshe ken yishma alecha, we'll listen to you the way we listen to Moshe. Rak. On condition, says Mesudas David. Rak. Yiyeh Hashem alokech imach asher yeh Moshe. Prove it to us that God is with you the way he was with Moshe. We give you a challenge, Yoshua. Prove yourself to us. Yoshua had to prove he is like Moshe. Well, how do you prove you're like somebody? You copy them. You mimic them. You think, what would he do in this situation? And I could prove to everybody else, I'm just like him. So that's exactly what Yoshua does. And that's what God tells him, Source 40. He says, I will be with you, Kasher Ayiti Moshe Ema. How am I going to be with you if I'm like, I was like Moshe? How am I going to prove it? Be strong, lishmor lasok kol haTorah asher tziva Moshe avdi. Listen to everything that I told Moshe to do. Listen to everything you're supposed to do. Al tasur mimenu yaminu small. Don't change a word. Leman taskil b'chol asher telech, and then you will be successful. And when Yoshua splits the sea, to remind the Jewish people of Moshe splitting the Yam Suf, God says to him in Source 41, this is when, ki kasher hayiti Moshe emach, this is where you'll show them, I'm with you the way I was with Moshe. He splits the Yarden, it's amazing, and look what happens next pasuk, Source 41, Perek Gimel, Bayom hahu gidel Hashem is Yoshua ben Kol Yisrael. They all realize, oh my gosh, this guy is like Moshe, because he copied Moshe, and because the same things that happened in the time of Moshe are not happening in the time of Yoshua. And that's one reason why commitment to Moshe's mission and not veering in any way was so important. But I think there's a much more important reason why we needed this in the time period of Yoshua, and we needed to have someone that was absolutely committed to not changing a word. And the reason for that is because we get very distracted in Sefer Yoshua. If I ask anyone, what's Sefer Yoshua about? They're going to say it's about conquering land, and it's about splitting up the land into territories. That's what Yoshua is about. And actually, then you're missing, I would say, the most important story in Sefer Yoshua. The most important story in Yoshua is Perechet. And that is when Yehoshua gives over the Torah to all of Am Yisrael for the second time. He transfers the Masorah over, and he creates a new covenant between the Jewish people and Hashem with this new generation of the people in Eretz Yisrael. It is the most important Perek of Sefer Yoshua. And in Perek, in Devarim, in Source 42, God tells him how to do it. Lo tasur mikol hadvarim asher anochi misaveh etcham hayom yamin usmo. When you give over the Masorah, you don't change a thing. It's the Masorah. You need to be obedient. You need to listen to the word for word that Moshe tells you to say. And that's why in Source 43, there's such an emphasis on Yoshua does exactly as he is told. Because for this job, that is what is needed. He needed to listen to every single word. Source 44, Yoshua gets it, and he's told in the very beginning the same words. Al tasur mimenu yaminu small. Don't you change a thing. And then when Yoshua dies, Source 45, that's what he tells the Jewish people. Make sure when it comes to teaching the Torah, lebilti sor mimenu yaminu small. Don't you turn at all. So I think the commitment of Yoshua to Moshe's message to the Masorah was so incredibly important in this point in history and was a quality we needed right now in our leadership. But there's a third answer, which is growth. You see, it's interesting when you think about Yoshua, we see him throughout the years. We first meet him as a boy following around Moshe, and then we end with him when he's a leader, and then he dies as a leader. We watch him grow over years. Think about how many people in Torah we have that type of situation for. It's very little. We meet Avram, he's already 75. Most people, we get snapshots, but we don't actually watch them throughout their entire lives. Yoshua, we do. And therefore, what we see in Yoshua is the growth of Yehoshua. I had pointed out to you in the beginning when I was asking my question two stories where Yehoshua makes a mistake. And the question is, why do we bring up those stories? Is it to say something negative about Yehoshua, or is it actually to say something positive? And I think through those stories, you actually see Yehoshua grow. If we go back to the first one, Chet Egel, source 46, it is true. He makes a mistake. He says to Moshe, Kol Muhammad B'machane, I hear war going on. And Moshe does say to him, you are wrong, Yehoshua. But the lesson what Moshe is saying is not, you are horrible, Yehoshua, you made a mistake. But it's rather Moshe is teaching Yehoshua a lesson. And he says, no, ein kol anikvurav, ein kol anichalusha. This is not someone winning and losing. That's not what this noise is. Kol anochi shamea. You need to know the difference between what war sounds like and what sin sounds like. You need to know the difference, Yehoshua. You need to learn because you're going to be the leader. You need to know. And you know what? When Yehoshua is the leader, he actually learns this lesson. And it's really quite beautiful how you see him grow. What Moshe is saying is, don't come to conclusions quickly. Investigate. Make sure you know the situation before you make a judgment call, because you need to make the right one when you're a leader. So what happens when Yehoshua thinks that Reuven and Gad and Chatzishev and Menashe are rebelling against the Jewish people? Yes, he gathers an army, but he doesn't invade. He sends Pinchas to go check it out. Investigate. Make sure that what I'm assuming is going on is actually going on, and we find out that it isn't, and the war does not happen. Yehoshua learns a lesson. Yehoshua grows. In story number two, Eldad Umedad, who are having Nevuah in the Machane, again, Yehoshua makes a mistake. And he yells, Vayomer Adoni Moshe Kla'im, and the Mefarshim try to figure out what's his problem, what's he so mad about. And the Ramban says he thought they were Nevi'e Sheker. They didn't go to Ol Moed. They shouldn't be having prophecy. He's worried they're saying wrong things. They're saying absolute lies, and he's mad. Rashi says no. He doesn't like what they're saying. They are saying Moshe mate Yehoshua machnisis Yisrael Aretz, which we know is true. Moshe's going to die, and Yehoshua is going to go into Eretz Yisrael. And he objects for the honor of his teacher, Moshe. How dare you say such a thing? And Moshe yells at him, or rebukes him, or teaches him. And he says, no, HaMekaneh Ali, are you jealous for me? Umi Yitain Kol Am Hashem Nevi'im, I wish everybody could prophesy. It would be amazing if God put his ruach on everyone. Moshe taught him a lesson here today, which is an important lesson as a leader, which is you can't be intimidated or feel threatened by people around you who have leadership qualities, who assert themselves in a leadership way, but rather you use them in your leadership team. Rather, you allow them to be the leaders that they are, because it's only going to help everybody around you to be even better. And therefore, you see Yehoshua knows this. Because as I was explaining my question to you, I explained to you that there were two other people who had leadership positions during the time of Yehoshua, and that's Kalev and Pinchas, who do leadership things. And that has no problem for Yehoshua. He's not threatened by them at all. He actually uses them to his advantage. He learns the lesson of not being threatened by other people around them. You see Yehoshua grow within the story. But you also see him grow within the language of the Pesukim. If you look at source 48, when we're introduced to Yehoshua in the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, there's a contrast between him and Moshe. Moshe is called Eved Hashem, and Yehoshua is called Misharet Moshe. Eved Hashem, oh, that's a prestigious title. Misharet Moshe, the helper of Moshe. And I gave you in small all of the places that Moshe is called Eved Hashem. And therefore, this is a title that really represents Moshe. He is the servant of God. Now look at source 49. The end of Yehoshua's leadership, Yehoshua dies, and he is no longer the Misharet Moshe. He is the Eved Hashem. He has grown. He has become the same title that Moshe had. And he's called it twice in Sefer Yehoshua and the beginning of Sefer Shoftim. It's a growth in Yehoshua. Secondly, I said to you in the beginning of Sefer Yehoshua, Chazak v'yamatz, Chazak v'yamatz. He's terrified, he's so scared. Everybody's telling him Chazak v'yamatz. Source 50, the middle of Yehoshua's leadership. Vayomer lehem Yehoshua al tira al tachta'u, chizku v'imsu. He says Chazak v'yamatz. He's strengthening the Jewish people. He no longer needs strength. He's the one who's giving the strength. Yehoshua grows. It's incredible to watch. And therefore, at the end of the day, we see that Yehoshua is chosen for three important reasons. Number one, he is consistent within the leadership of Moshe. He knows what Moshe would do, and he does it. He's committed to Moshe, to every word that Moshe says he's supposed to do. And he grows as a person. To me, it makes so much sense that the two roles that Moshe gives to him when he's younger reflect to us what he's going to do when he's older. You see, Moshe has him lead in the war of Amalek because Moshe knows in the future he's going to lead in all of the battles against Canaan. Moshe brings him somewhat up Har Sinai with him because Yoshua is the one who gives over the Masorah to the people in the next generation. It is fitting that Yoshua is not there when Chet HaEgel happens, and he's not one of the people who sin in Chet Meraglim. He's not involved in either sin. But I'm not done yet, because I still have to ask you another question. All right, I like Yoshua now. We're doing good. But what about Kalev and what about Pinchas? Right? Why didn't they, therefore, get to be the leader? And I think the answer is really quite simple. See, there are different types of leaders. And these are all good leaders. But there are different types. And different types are needed at different times. Yoshua was the leader of consistency and of commitment. Kalev and Pinchas are innovators. They are free spirits. They do more things that are rash or things that are zealous. When you think about Kalev, he speaks up. What is this question that one might have on Kalev speaking up in the story of the spies? Isn't that chutzpah? Moshe and Aaron are standing right there. You get to speak up in front of Moshe and Aaron? No, you sit there like Yoshua quietly, who's turning to Moshe and Aaron saying, you'll do something, I'm sure you will. How about Pinchas? Cosby and Zimri are sitting in front of Moshe. That's what the pasuk says. Moshe's not doing anything. There's no beast in. Nobody said he deserves death. Pinchas comes and stabs him in the stomach and he dies. You might have thought Kalev and Pinchas did something wrong. You might have thought they went too far. They went out of bounds. That's why Source 51, God has to praise them. He has to praise them because he has to say, don't think they did something wrong. Yeah, he's different, but he did something good, and I'll reward him. And so too about Mibar Chafei, he says about Pinchas, even though he did something zealous, he is good. He did something that it showed my anger against Cosby. And he says that's a good thing. However, this type of personality, the personality that you have no idea what they're going to do next, and you don't really know if they're going to be able to commit to Moshe and say word for word what Moshe said, they can't have the job of Yoshua. You can't have someone like a Kalev or a Pinchas give over a Masorah. You can't have them give over the Torah and a covenant because I don't know if they're going to lasur yaminu small, say something slightly different. I need a Yoshua in the generation following Moshe. I need someone who's much more committed to stepping right into Moshe's shoes. But rather, Kalev and Pinchas are awesome leaders and they do awesome things, but they're not appropriate for this time. Not only that, to refer to one of my favorite stories in all of Tanakh, Source 52, in the time of Eliyahu gets very, very mad. He does this huge miracle at Har Kamel. Fire comes down from the sky. Everyone's, Shemu Elokim. We're excited. It's amazing. And then you know what happens the next day? Everybody goes back to the way it was before. And Eliyahu gets mad and he runs away and he says, God, just kill me already. Using the words, Kano Kaneti La Shem, same words like used by Pinchas. Very similar personalities, zealousness, more rash. You don't know what's coming next when it comes to them. And God tries to teach him a lesson. He says, go outside, and all of a sudden there's this huge wind. He says, God's not in the wind. There's a thunder, God's not in the thunder. There's a fire, God's not in the thunder. And then there's a cold, Mamadaka. There's a constant voice. I love this story. And what's the message of the story? You can scream, you could do a major event, but if it's not followed up by consistent message, it all goes away. Eliyahu, you're awesome, but since you ditched them, we need to replace you with someone who every day will say the same message and won't give up, not just one big event and then gives up. So too with Pinchas, and when it comes to Kalev, they have these like big moments, but then they disappear. Yoshua is consistent. He's there every single day. He's standing next to Moshe every single day, doing that job, whether it's good things, whether it's hard things, like picking things up off the floor for him. He's Misharit Moshe. He's a consistent character, and that is the type of leader that we certainly needed. But to me, what I love seeing about Yoshua is the growth of Yoshua. It's so fun to watch him grow in the psukim, from this person who doesn't really know what he's doing, to the person who's learning, the person who's growing, and then who becomes ultimately an incredible leader, Source 53. I wish we had this pasuk more often in Torah. Vayavod Yisrael et Hashem kol yamei Yoshua. Ah, we were good. We didn't serve Avodah Zarah. We didn't do all these hard, because it's the time of Yoshua was a good time period. See, for Shoftim, I wish we could say this, right? Yoshua was a good time period because he is an incredible leader. He grows as a person and he inspires us to grow. You know, this year for you is a year of growth. It's a year where you set aside your time and you are sitting here doing things every single day, including learning and all the other trips and all the amazing things that you are doing here in your school to grow, because this is a year that you've set aside for yourself. But the interesting thing is that the perspective of you're here for your year in Israel to grow is true, but it doesn't end when you go home. Growth continues throughout the rest of your life. Everybody can grow every single day. Yes, it might be a more intense time of growth while you're here, but you should set yourself up that in the rest of your life, you give yourself opportunities for growth. You put yourself in a situation where you can grow. Surround yourself with people that will help you grow. Surround yourself in an environment where you can continue learning and you can continue growing and doing incredible things. For 5 minutes, indulge me. But I come here to represent Stern College, which I know there's a few of you who will be going, but all of you have heard of the location. And it is an incredible place for growth and for Torah knowledge, with incredible teachers and opportunities of getting involved in the school, of getting involved in Chassid, getting involved in the community. It is an incredible, incredible place to be. And I just watch my students in awe sometimes when they tell me about all the opportunities that they have, and I kind of get a little jealous, wishing I could go back and do it all over again. But I also just want to mention another program. Even for those of you who are not going to Stern College, there is, as Rabbi Seif mentioned, an incredible program located in Stern, which is called the GPATS program, which is the graduate program in Advanced Talmudic Studies, which I happen to be the director of. It is a 2 years master's degree program, Gemara all morning, Halacha all afternoon, a lot of extra things as well in terms of internships and other speakers and all sorts of fun things are included, but it is a free master's degree, where you can also take courses in Israeli and Revel and get a second free master's degree. It is a really incredible program where the goal is to create women leadership. That's the goal, to create women who are able to learn Torah on a very high level, to then teach Torah on a high level, or just be role models outside in the world, take on positions like Yoetzeh or other types of positions, which are really, really quite amazing. You do not have to go to Stern College in order to go to the GPATS program. Also, even if you are not in Stern College, you can be involved in a program that GPATS runs, which is called June's Man at Stern. For the month of June, we run a learning program at Stern. It is also Gemara and Halacha, and it is for all different levels, and it is for anybody who wants to come. If you are interested, please contact me either at gpats@yu.edu or nachamaprice@gmail, all of those are fine, to come every day 9 to 1 in the month of June and just sit and learn. Just sit and learn some Torah. It's a beautiful environment, and there's lots of these types of opportunities at Stern College, and I hope that you all look into whether you're in Stern itself, you want to come to GPATS, or even at other places, but to come to Stern to learn at night or wherever it is to get these opportunities for learning and for growth. And I wish you the best of luck in the rest of your year here in Israel and in everything that you're going to be doing in the future. Thank you very much for having me. Other questions? I ignored you.